Welcome to another episode of the Waters and Harvey Show. I'm Darren Waters.
And I'm Marcus Harvey.
It's good to have you all back here with us again. And I'm sure that as the show opened today, you noticed something different. You know, Marcus, I'd like to say this as we open the show this time that, you know, you and I have kind of been tweaking the show as we've gone along, especially recently. There have been a number of tweaks that we've made to it, not only after we came back to start recording shows after we were on hiatus for a while. It was because of COVID that forced us into that hiatus, as you all in the audience know. We expanded the show from 30 minutes to an hour, which has been a lot of fun. But what I have noticed, Marcus, we still run out of time with our guests because the conversations get really good, don't they?
Yeah, indeed. You know, we've made several tweaks over the years. Thinking back to those 30-minute shows that we used to do, I would think to myself, man, if only we could have 30 more minutes, you know, we could just flesh out so much more and dive so much more deeply. But now that we've been within the hour format now for well over a year, I'm now feeling the same thing now that I felt in the 30-minute format. So I don't know, maybe an hour and a half. 2 hours is what we need. So
you all can give us your feedback and tell us what you think about that. Yeah. One of the things that happens to Marcus and I is that the conversations spill over into a phone call after we have actually been in the studio or come together now via Zoom to actually record a show. So we've been tweaking it. And we also tweaked how we introduced the show because we went to kind of the cold open model, Marcus, and it's been fun to do the cold opens, to write the script for the cold opens. I've heard from a number of people who are regular listeners to the show that those cold opens have been very thought-provoking.
Yeah, definitely. And I would just say one thing that our listeners should know about Dr. Waters and the phone calls that he just referenced a moment ago. So what tends to happen is during these phone calls, which happen subsequent to a recorded show, Dr. Waters takes that as an opportunity to correct me on what I've got wrong about him. The cold opens are fun, and I think that they really are helpful for framing these conversations that we've been having, which I think really require clear framing. So I'm excited to see that the cold opens have been received so well.
Well, we didn't need to have a cold open today to frame the conversation. I think that this is going to be a really fun show that we're going to have. But as you heard the show open today, you heard a new piece of music. Title of that song, that piece of music, Jazz. Marcus and I are real big jazz fans, especially Marcus. The title of that piece is called Leroy, which is done by the band Decor. We're going to be talking with members of that band today. They have given Marcus and I the great privilege and honor of now having that song as the official theme music for the Waters and Harvey Show. Now, Marcus and I have to talk a little bit about how that came to be. We have been in great conversations with the team at Blue Ridge Public Radio. And Marcus, I would like to just take the time again to thank the team at Blue Ridge Public Radio for all of the work that they do to put the show together. I mean, it's watching Matt Bush kind of behind the scenes as he kind of edits the show and puts it together has been great, you know, kind of to be in that relationship with Matt. And I think about Catherine and everyone else is there. But, you know, we began to have conversations about, you know, what would be the next phase of the Waters and Harvey Show. It's been great to get the feedback from you all, to talk with people across the state who have heard the show and are listening to the show. And Marcus and I want to continue to build the audience for the show. And so that invited a conversation about having an original piece for the show. And so Marcus and I, you know, kind of played with that. But Marcus, let me just let you jump in here and just share your thoughts with that.
Yeah,
about that conversation.
I think it's high time that, we sort of arrive at an original piece for the show. I think that that what we do on the show itself, is really something that is unique, right? Mm-hmm. Across the national landscape of radio shows and podcasts. And I have to say, from my own sort of selfish perspective, being not only a big jazz fan, but somewhat of a jazz snob, I'm kind of admitting that. I was particularly thrilled when I was acquainted with what will now be the theme music for our show. So I couldn't be more thrilled. I'm also a huge fan of Herbie Hancock. So
right.
part of me is sort of lamenting the loss of Herbie's piece, but I'm equally, if not more, excited about Leroy, and also grateful to BPR for the conversations that we've had around changes that we're making moving forward.
Right. So, you know, we'll be talking with members of the band, the Core, in just a few minutes about this song and about some of their other work as well. And one of the things we thought this gave us the opportunity again to kind of talk about why you and I came together to do this show. This has been, I think, one of the greatest and best experiences of my life. It's not only deepened our friendship, but our intellectual friendship as well. And it's, you know, again, I think great to hear the feedback that we get from listeners who talk about the dynamics of our relationship. And you should know, you know, as Marcus just did, he likes to take pot shots at me every now and then when he gets the chance. So, you know, I'm prepared. I'm trying to kind of be prepared for those pot shots when they come. But, you know, doing this show really gave us an opportunity to think about why we did the show from the very beginning, and because we're nearing 100 episodes of the Waters and Harvey show, and we've been thinking about, okay, how do we do the 100th show? But here we are talking about this new theme music, but also reflecting on why we started the show. I think it's meaningful and fitting that we do that now, because many of our listeners may not know, and many may, because I think we have mentioned this before, that we started the show at WRES, which was a local low-power radio station here in Asheville, North Carolina. A radio station that as a kid growing up here in Asheville, I grew up listening to. And Marcus and I just said, look, we wanted to get outside the ivory tower with the work that we do at UNC Asheville to talk directly to the community, because there's so much exciting stuff, Marcus, going on at UNC Asheville. I think a lot of people in the community sometimes miss that.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I think about the genesis of the show, you know, I remember arriving in Asheville in 2013, not really knowing what to expect, not knowing a whole hell of a lot about UNC Asheville, what the university was about. And then Dr. Waters sort of reached out to me kind of out of nowhere. And we built a friendship very quickly, which is kind of unusual for me. And that friendship was really built around ongoing conversations, right, about our respective disciplines, Darren being a historian, me being a religion scholar, and sort of connecting our respective research agendas to what was going on in the world. Right. At one point, the thought sort of occurred to us, you know, we're having these great stimulating conversations as scholars. What if we try to make these conversations available to a broader lay audience? Right. Mm-hmm. What would it mean to translate our technical disciplinary research in a way that is accessible, right, mm-hmm, to the broader community? And so, you know, therein lies the genesis of the Waters and Harvey show. And you mentioned Elder John Hayes. Mm-hmm. Were it not for his generosity, encouragement, and support at WRES, and sort of, you know, helping us to launch this project in what, 2014 is hard to believe.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. There will be no Waters and Harvey show.
That's right.
At all. So I'm eternally grateful to Elder Hayes for what he contributed to the show. Without him, the show would not be what it is today. And I would also add that this whole notion of me launching pot shots at my colleague, Dr. Waters, this is only a response to him having started this tradition, 7 years ago. So,
well, you know, Marcus, I'm glad you bring up Elder Hayes. And I know that many of our listening audience, especially here locally, are, if you're in any part of Western North Carolina, you're going to know who Elder John Hayes was. And he died 2 weeks ago. I think it's about 2 weeks ago he passed away. But you're right, the show would not exist without his generosity and without the effort that he put into it. I wanted to talk about, you know, the changes, Marcus, in our music. So when we went to WRES, the first piece that we used to introduce the show, and working with Elder Hayes on this, is we used a song from one of my favorite R&B singers, who was the late Gerald LaVert. You know, was the son of Eddie LaVert, who was a member of the OJs. I mean, people remember that band. It's one of my favorite groups. R&B groups out there. But we, you know, just before he died, his last album, Gerald Levert's last album, was titled Do I Speak for the World? And those of you who've never heard that album, it's one that Marcus and I have referenced before. And we've said, we've encouraged people who like R&B music to go listen to this. It's one of his most, it is his most socially conscious album that he did. You know, Dr. Who Cornel West is actually on this album. And so it's an interesting album to listen to, but we used the song Marcus Crucified Me as the theme music for the show, because we figured we were probably going to get crucified from for some of the things that we said. And time to time that almost happened from some of the things that Dr. Harvey would actually say on the show, right?
Yeah, I'm guilty as charged. Guilty as charged. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, it is interesting to think about the sort of musical genealogy of the show. Right. Thinking back to Crucify Me, and then I'm thinking also about the transition that we made from WRES to BPR in 2017, and making the decision to sort of shift from Crucify Me. Which, as you pointed out, is sort of squarely within the R&B genre, to the jazz genre, which is very much more so sort of my preference, and looking at Herbie Hancock's catalog, right, for inspiration in that in that respect. And so, yeah, I think that it's been, for me, it has been generative. It has been exciting to be able to introduce our show, these very deep, challenging conversations that we've had over the years, with different musical genres, right? Again, beginning with R&B, now shifting to jazz, and so it seems sort of staying within sort of the jazz, the jazz genre, which I think is appropriate, because as one previous guest has pointed out to us, you recall my doctoral advisor, Dr. Diane Stewart, pointed out that the back and forth between the two of us reminded her of a jazz composition, right? So it seems to me that the jazz music is very much apropos as an introduction to our conversation.
To the show. And, you know, Marcus, if I could step back for one quick minute and just talk about Elder Hayes and the, you know, difference between us. You know, I have to tell the audience this, that at one time he did say, you know, the difference between you two guys is that one of you are ready to burn it down. The other one is trying to throw water on it all the time. So, but you know, Marcus, I can't reflect upon the conversations with Elder Hayes, and what really deepened the relationship with him is he had a passion for not only for community, but a passion for history. And I remember you and I talking to him at one point about, okay, are we talking in language that people can't access? And he said, you never dumb down the language. You know, you lift people up to where you are, bring them up, make them stretch. So I deeply appreciated his passion for community and his passion for history. And in many ways, you know, David Feingold, who general manager at Blue Ridge Public Radio, who is the one who introduced, who suggested Herbie Hancock's piece from the album New Standard, and the song that we have been using, or the piece that we've been using up to this point, is New York Minute. That was David's idea. So we have David Feingold to kind of thank for that. But it was interesting with David and the conversations that we would have with him, because we would go into the studio at WRES and it would be hard to get out of the studio with Elder Hayes, because he was so engaged in those conversations. He wanted the conversations to continue even after you and I had exhausted ourselves doing a show. We had to stay back and talk with him for a while. We found that we found ourselves kind of in the same relationship with David, Feingold as well. But we have learned so much, not only from those conversations from each other, but the conversations that we had both with Elder Hayes and the conversations with David Feingold. So we are truly appreciative of how the Waters and Harvey Show project has grown over time.
Yeah, and I would just say this as we transition to our guest momentarily. I think one of the things that I learned from my time working with Elder Hayes and then later David Feingold is that, you know, our graduate school training, and I think Darren, you would agree, it doesn't necessarily teach us how to, I mean, it teaches us how to talk to other people in within our guild, Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily equip us with the, you know, with the ability to again, to translate our technical guild-based training for a broader audience. And I think that these conversations or, you know, this ongoing work with Elder Hayes or the work we did with him and also the work that we did with David Feingold later, sort of, at least speaking for myself, forced me to develop this sort of ability, this skill, right, to confront the challenge of learning how to make my research relevant, right, to the community and to the issues that the local community and now at this point, you know, the broader state and national communities find themselves wrestling with. And so, again, I'm grateful to both Elder and David Feingold for that.
All right. Well, Marcus, as we get ready to transition into this conversation with the members of the group, the core, one thing I do want to say to our audience is to thank you all again for continuing to engage in these conversations with us. Marcus and I appreciate the feedback that we continue to get. And Marcus, I did want to bring up because, you know, the shows kind of connect with each other. You know, we will reference something from the last show, that last show that we did with Dr. Olive Gloag. One of the things I'll say there about that show is that we had a coup of sorts because we got him to admit something about the United States that Oliver is not always inclined to admit. And that is that the United States in one way is a bit progressive. And he had to admit that at the very end. So that was a coup for us there. Anyone who knows Dr. Gloag really well. So I'm just taking a pot shot at our colleague.
But it was an admission through gritted teeth. Let's be clear.
It was. And Marcus, that show generated a number of comments from folks, but one in particular stood out to me from Dr. Luther Barnes. Luther Barnhart, who is a regular listener to the show. Luther, we know you're out there. We thank you for the support that you continue to give to Marcus and I. Thank you for the feedback that you give us. You know, he wrote in, and I think, Marcus, this is something for us to take up in a later show, because we were talking about the issue of race and racism and looking at it not only from the perspective of the United States, but also the perspective of France in that particular show. And he wondered in his email to me about the use of the term race. And he said, you know, we have in the show that we did with Malia, when Malia was on the show with us and we talked about the whole reparations issue, Malia brought up, we know that race is a social construct. This is a conversation that we've been having within academic communities for within the academy for a while. It is. And Dr. Barnhart is wondering, how can we get beyond this conversation of race and looking at us all as members of the human race? And so I think that this is worth us kind of taking up at some point. I just wanted to acknowledge that that Dr. Barnhart sent that comment in, and it really kind of resonated with me. I have responded to him, but it's a conversation I'd like to come back to.
Yeah, definitely. I would just say, just quickly before we transition, I don't know that you get beyond race without first wrestling with it, right? Nope. And its history and just the devastation that it has wrought. I think you have to deal with that first. And I would also add that I'm not sure that there is, at the end of the day, in the North American context, finally, any getting beyond race. But as you said, that's a separate show.
Right. Well, you're listening to the Waters and Harvey Show on Blue Ridge Public Radio. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. So welcome back to the Waters and Harvey Show on Blue Ridge Public Radio. Today, we're talking about jazz with members of the band, The Core, who recorded our new theme song, Leroy. And so we're glad to welcome them into this conversation. Now we have with us today, let me just introduce them by name. We're so glad that you all are here with us, guys. We have Justin Ray, we have Jacob Rodriguez, and also Bill Barris. So it is great to have all of you in here with us today.
Welcome, guys.
Welcome to the show. And the one thing that we have to say, you know, this is kind of a UNC Asheville moment, right? Because we are all colleagues at UNC Asheville. So guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So Marcus and I have told you how we're really excited about this new theme song that that you all have allowed us to use, and we're looking forward to using it. Marcus, you have to tell, you have to talk about how you responded to it. Both of us responded to this song right off the bat. Bill, you know, I had a conversation with you about the possibility of maybe you all taking this on as a project, thinking, well, you might work on something new, or maybe even inviting some students into this process to see what we could come up with. You said to me, look, you know, I've got some ideas. I've got a couple of things I'd like to suggest. This was one of the first tracks that you sent. And the moment I heard it, I just said, this is the piece. Let's see if we can get this one. Marcus, your response was the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hadn't heard it before, but upon hearing it, I was just really struck by the energy of the piece. I think it kind of has a reflective attitude or personality or mood that definitely fits, I think, the character of the show. So again, I couldn't be more excited about this theme music.
Yeah, so thank you. So one place I think I'd like to start, and Justin, Jacob, or Bill, whoever wants to jump in here, just please jump in. But tell us about the band, the core. Just tell us a little bit about the band. How long have you all been together, and what brought you together?
Well, Jacob and I moved here in 2008, and we've been playing together in various contexts before that. And then, Bill, you got here in 2010, is that right?
2011.
And we initially put together a band dedicated to playing nothing but the classics of the hard bop genre. So lots of Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, lots of Horace Silver. And we did that for 4 or 5 years. And then decided after doing that for a while that we wanted to kind of keep the same personnel in the band, but do nothing but original compositions by band members. So that was sort of the transition, coming out of playing all these tunes from the hard bop genre. Lots of Lee Morgan music, actually.
No, okay.
Transitioning into doing more original music.
So, you know, and it occurs to me, Justin, here to ask you, because you and I have had a chance to talk a little bit, and I think if I'm remembering correctly, you are from, are you from New Mexico?
I'm from New Mexico, yes.
From New Mexico. Jacob and Bill, can you tell us a little bit about where you're from? I mean, I know the university kind of brings us all together, but if you could just give us an idea of a little bit of your background.
Go ahead, Jacob. You got this.
Yeah, sure. I for the most part, I'm from all over the country, but for the most part, I grew up in San Antonio, Texas, which has a pretty vibrant youth, middle school, high school, band jazz scene. So that's kind of where I got my start with it.
And I'm from Omaha.
Okay. That's right, Bill. That's right. Right.
Yeah. And like Jacob, I grew up playing, I played trumpet and was really serious about that all the way through high school. It was kind of a strong band tradition there. And then after going to college on the East Coast, I moved back to Omaha as a piano player, and I discovered a totally different side of Omaha, kind of playing piano than playing trumpet. So,
wow. Yeah. Marcus, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a sort of a question that kind of goes back to Justin's comments about sort of starting with the focus on the hard bop genre. And you know, this is a bit of an aside, but you know, I think about bop, I think about people like, you know, Dizzy Gillespie, for example. What was it about hard bop? What was it about hard bop, right? That initially attracted you.
For me, it was like, yeah, for me, it was my first almost like I went from I played trumpet in high school, but I was not that interested in it. And then I transitioned into playing. I heard Lee Morgan and all of a sudden wanted to be a jazz musician. So it was a very, I discovered him as a youngster. And so he's been a really powerful influence for me. But then I remember having a conversation when not long after Bill moved to town, we had played a gig or a jam session somewhere and we were hanging out after.
Tresses.
Tresses. And he turned to me and he said, "Do you like hard bop?"
It was like this.
Yeah, and it's sort of like he looked into my soul.
Really excellent question. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was sort of the beginning of the whole, you know, the hard bop explosion as it transitioned into the core. So we've been together as as a band in one form or another for the last 10 years now.
Okay. Now, how many members of the band are there, Justin, or whoever wants to
jump in? It's a quintet. Trumpet. Okay. Jacob plays the saxophone. Bill plays piano. Zach Page is our bassist, and Evan Martin plays the drums.
Okay. Now, you all play locally here, right? How can people catch any performances that you're doing?
Usually we post things on our Facebook page, which is the Core Jazz. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Just want to make sure that's true.
That is true.
We're usually playing one Monday a month at Little Jumbo.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of our home base. Nashville has turned into that. And then just the kind of things come down the pipe as they do, you know, now that things are opening back up, I hope there'll be a lot of summer performances.
Right. Well, you know, one thing, since we're talking about the song Leroy, and you've mentioned Lee Morgan here, you know, Justin, you told me about what inspired this song, and I think you're the writer. You wrote this one. And I know, Jacob, you write some of the pieces for the band as well. But Justin, you know, just tell us, what did inspire this particular song, Leroy?
It sort of occurred to me after I wrote it. I mean, I don't even think of it as a tribute to, because the name Leroy means Lee Morgan and Roy Hargrove, who were two of my biggest influences as a trumpet player and composer. And I don't even really mean it as a tribute, because I feel like, because of their heavy influence on me, I feel like you could take any piece that I wrote and say that it was a tribute to them, because they've influenced me so heavily. But when I got done writing Leroy, it occurred to me that I felt like it's a piece that they could have collaborated on. And so that's why I called it that, because I felt like it had such strong characteristics of each of their composing styles that I thought,
Now, it really is interesting, because, Marcus, I don't know if you want to go here or not, but I'm opening the door for you, you know, on the name Leroy. It's a common name, right?
Yeah, right. It's funny. I didn't even think about it until after I'd already like typed it out on the paper and said it out loud.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In fact, you know, I have no problem admitting, you know, when I first saw the song title, I was like, what is this? Leroy. No, but this is fascinating. So I'm thinking, and anybody, you know, feel free to respond to this. I, you know, as someone who has been sort of into jazz, at least since my days at Morehouse as a college student, you know, it's always fascinating to me to chart the influences the jazz musicians have upon one another over time, right? So I'm just curious to hear, maybe Justin and others as well who want to weigh in. Who were sort of Lee Morgan and Roy Hargrove as jazz artists, right? And what has been their influence, right, on your musicianship, right, both individually and as a band?
Well, to me, that's one of the things I like about. I mean, to me, the lines between like you said, Dizzy, the line between Dizzy and Lee is almost direct. It kind of goes through Clifford Brown and Fats Navarro, and then you kind of combine these stylists. And then if you trace from Lee Morgan down to Freddie Hubbard, down to, you know, Wynton Marsalis, and you get to Roy, like the lineage to me is so, it's there to be seen pretty with just a little bit of study, I think. And you see them, and not to say that they're all direct descendants of each other, because they all have their personality quirks. And that's one of the things that first drew me to jazz, is like, you have this lineage of trumpet players that are all influenced by each other, but you can always, the fact that they can all make this same piece of metal tubing sound so different and sound, fill it with so much personality, was one of the first things that drew me to the jazz music and those artists in particular. Mm.
So anybody else want to jump in here, Bill? I'm seeing some expression on your face, but you know, and Justin, you and I had a chance, because, you know, talking with you prompted me to go and really look up, because I didn't know Roy Hargrove. And so I took the time to go on YouTube, and I mean, he was a fantastic and fabulous as a young guy.
Yeah.
A trumpet player. And it seems to me that his talent, man, developed early on. So I don't want to say disappointed to learn that he's no longer with us, that he passed away. But did it surprise you that he could develop this type of talent at such an early age? And I'm curious about, you know, when can you tell when a jazz artist has hit their sweet spot in their development? And Jacob, I see your facial expression, so please, please have that here. Right.
I think that's a really difficult thing to try to assess, because like even some of the giants in jazz were not appreciated in the moment. I mean, people hated Coltrane when he was first coming up with his new things, and later on he was way wider appreciated and accepted. But I mean, you hear stories about the free jazzers coming to New York, and it was bad. It was bad. But it was a whole new thing that people came to love and appreciate later on, you know.
Is that common across music genres, that you have this, you know, this lack of appreciation for artists until, you know, is this more of something that we get with jazz? And the reason why I'm kind of asking that question, and then Marcus, you jump in here too. I would consider myself still a novice when it comes to the jazz genre. I've been a big R&B fan for a long time. You know, some of my favorite jazz artists, as I think about, and Bill, who would it be? Joe Sample. I love Joe Sample as a pianist, and Ellis Marsalis. It's something about the piano that I'm just kind of drawn to. And I think that probably has a lot to do with my grandfather, who was a pianist and played very classical pianist. He could do some jazz. He did a little bit of that, but mostly kind of in that classical and traditional area. But Because I'm asking that question because, you know, as a kid, I remember listening to jazz, if you're thinking about hard bop, and thinking that a lot of this sounds like noise to me, you know, and you still hear so many people who say that. How do you respond to that kind of question? And I hope that that's a sensible question that I'm kind of asking you all here.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I played with Ira Sullivan, who recently passed, in Miami, and he played with Charlie Parker and Dizzy and all those folks. And he said he spent his whole life looking for the pretty notes, whatever those are.
Okay.
He's been looking for them his whole life. So I don't think you ever quite get to that point where you feel like you've perfected whatever it is you're trying to put in front of an audience, you know. And so it does sound, I mean, what the audience I think responds to is the search for those notes, and it might not come out, you know, but the audience, you know, if the audience is good, they're on that journey with you, you know, they're listening. And if you're not willing to take that journey, then of course it's going to sound pretty out.
Right. You know, Bill, I really appreciate that. But Marcus, let me let you jump in here.
Yeah. I'm a question I sort of have for all three of you. So just to be transparent, so I grew up, you know, with parents who exposed me to, you know, Oscar Peterson, you know, Art Tatum, McCoy Tyner. I mean, so much of my early exposure to jazz really focused on jazz pianists, right? Mm-hmm. And there were other artists as well that I was exposed to, Art Blakey, Miles Davis, of course, Coltrane. You know, these are sort of canonical figures in the American jazz tradition. But sort of picking up on Darren's question about, you know, so from the perspective of someone who's who is either a jazz novice or who hasn't really engaged jazz deeply. I'm curious to hear from each of you, as professional musicians, right? What is it about jazz that sort of attracted you to this particular genre? I think that part of what's interesting about jazz is that like blues music, for example, I mean, it can be pointed to as one of the uniquely American cultural idioms, right? That has origins in sub-Saharan Africa. So anyway, I'm just curious to hear, what was there something about jazz in particular that sort of caused you to gravitate toward it? Was it more of an accidental thing? So it's just, any thoughts about that would be greatly appreciated.
I mean, sort of just piggybacking on what I said before, sort of as a trumpet player, like learning how to make sound on the trumpet and then discovering all these people that had all kinds of different solutions to that problem as to how to make beautiful sounds on the trumpet. And there were, like, you know, for every great trumpet player you heard, they had a different solution to that problem. Here's my version of the beautiful sound, you know? And that's the first thing that really, like, sort of like that you know, and it was sort of like, you know, you had to dig for it, because if you just listen to like, you know, it doesn't, it might not immediately, like just a novice jazz listener might just hear a trumpet and think, oh, it's the trumpet. You know what I mean? So you definitely have to do a little digging, but I think definitely rewards, if you want to spend a little time with each of these people, you kind of see like, and going back to Darren's comments about the sweet spot, like, and about Lee Morgan and Roy Hargrove in particular, I feel like they had two kind of separate sweet spots. Mm-hmm. And you can hear like Lee Morgan as a 19-year-old and being like, I feel like you can tell in his sound and his exuberance that he's almost surprised by how good he sounds. You know what I mean? The way that, that people who get good at something very young do. And then as you hear him as an older man, he only lived to be 32, actually. So older.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Wow.
But I feel like you can hear the weight of the world, even in his sound, as he's gone through the world and he recovered from addiction a handful of times. And I feel like you can hear a lot of these worldly problems that you know, they put themselves in his sound. And so that's what really attracted me to jazz, I think.
Wow. You know, and you know, Justin, I really appreciate that. And Bill, something that you said about the search, I'm going to use that one, because, you know, Mark is talking about, you know, this idea that jazz, I read Stanley Crouch a lot, who is a social critic, and he wrote a lot about jazz, talking about the relationship between the blues and the jazz. And I'd love to get your take on that. But before we kind of jump into that, because I could go, you know, down another whole path on this idea of the search and thinking about the American experience and what it means. And if we do look at jazz as as kind of the quintessential art, the original American art form that it gives to the world, you know, what does that say about who we are as a nation, the continued search, and if we're willing to be on that search? So I love that, Bill. So I'm going to steal that. So I'm just warning you now on that one. But you brought, Justin, you all brought in a couple of tracks that we would love for the audience to be able to hear and just sample. And so if you could just kind of introduce us to the first one here and just tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Jacob, you want to take that? I think the first one is yours.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So this is a song that I wrote called Vega, and it kind of coincides with a couple things. When I was a kid, I loved to go to the arcade and play Street Fighter II, and that was my favorite character in that game. Remember Vega. But I also happened to be doing some like random middle of the night reading about stars, and I was learning about the star Vega, and it kind of crossed into a composition the next day that led to I think the next rehearsal, and it all worked out. So
right, well, great. So we're going to share a piece, a sample of that with the audience now. So Jacob, you guys, thank you for sharing that with the audience. So I know that you have another track that we're going to do here in just a few minutes, but I wanted to ask you, how can the audience that is interested in getting your music, is there somewhere where they can, you know, pick up your music? Where can Marcus and I kind of point them to? I think that, if I'm correct, the song, the title track that we're using now as the theme music for the show is a part of a larger album project, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about that project?
Anybody? Do you want me to? Okay.
Yeah, anybody? Yeah,
it's from our second album. We have a self-titled first album, and then our second album is called Turning Point, which is a composition by Bill Bears that appears on the album. And that you can get that on iTunes. You can stream it on any of the streaming services. I think we have vinyl. We have actual vinyl records for sale on our website, thecorejazz.com. Mm-hmm. And those are the best three ways to do it. I personally am, you know, I like the vinyl an awful lot. I think it sounds really cool, but you can stream or buy the music anywhere that you know, just look for The Core or The Core Jazz.
Well, thank you. Well, once again, we want to remind you, you're listening to the Waters and Harvest Show on Blue Ridge Public Radio. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to the Waters and Harvest Show on Blue Ridge Public Radio. Today, we're talking about jazz with members of the band, The Core, who recorded our new theme song. And so we're really glad to have you guys here. Marcus, I don't know about you, but I'm having fun with this conversation. It's kind of freewheeling and kind of like jazz can be, right?
Okay, yeah.
But let me let you jump in here for the next
question. Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when I was at Morehouse, this is my senior year, and I took what was one of my favorite courses. It was kind of a, you know, gen ed course, but the course was entitled History of Jazz. Mm-hmm. And in that course, I learned a lot about, at the time I didn't know a lot about jazz sort of historically, culturally, intellectually. So I was surprised at how much the professor talked about the blues. I'm like, I thought this was a course on jazz. Right? So I'm just curious to hear from you all as professional, again, jazz artists, how do you understand that relationship between, you know, the blues idiom and the jazz idiom? Is that an important relationship for listeners to understand as they perhaps decide to explore jazz music and or blues music? So any thoughts about that relationship?
Jacob's looking at me like he wants to.
Go ahead, Bill.
I sort of, you know, I've done some research on jazz in Europe, and actually was overseas in Europe at festivals, and I was interviewing American musicians who'd go over there and then European musicians. So I kind of got the panoply of perspectives there. And it was really interesting because I found that the American musicians, when they had something to criticize about the European productions, it was that blues element was missing. I do feel like there's quite a bit that now is contained under the jazz umbrella, but for certain people, if they don't hear that blues element, you know, it can go south pretty quickly. So we loved hard bop because it's kind of anchored pretty firmly into that bluesy thing. And I think our original music is kind of coming out of that hard bop thing quite a bit. And so we feel pretty anchored to it, but other groups don't, you know, and that's their choice.
And Bill, when you talk about the bluesy element, so I remember learning about things like, you know, the well-worn 12-bar blues structure, right, and how that is infused so many other musical genres, rock and early rock and roll, for example. But when you talk about that bluesy element, I think that's how you termed it. What do you mean, Bill? I mean, are you talking about, because there are some scholars who would talk about blues in terms of a form of creative catharsis, right? That is a way of sort of musically dealing with human suffering. So that's kind of more of a philosophical approach to jazz music. But from a musical perspective, Bill, what is that bluesy element that informs jazz? If that's a fair question for you.
Man, I'm going to throw that to Jacob. You know, let me just interrupt here and say, piano has its own limitations, right? It's a great instrument, but it comes to its anchor. It was born in Europe, right? And it doesn't have any kind of microtonal capacity whatsoever. It's tempered. And so you have to crush some notes and do some different things, push and pull the time to achieve bluesy effects. And I feel like the saxophone is a much more appropriate, or capable instrument, maybe. So that's why I threw that to Jacob. And also your turn.
That's a good assist. Yeah, and to go back to an earlier question, Marcus, that's kind of what drew me to the saxophone too, was the very human element of it. It's really funny. Whenever I practice in my house, my security cameras go off outside and it says, "We think we hear a person talking."
And oh wow! Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But yeah, I think there is that element of expression that you can get across in the saxophone. You can do it in the trumpet, but I see what Bill's talking about with limitations in terms of being a fixed instrument. You can hear a person cry through their instrument. You can hear a person's like happiness, complete and utter sorrow, be displayed in the notes that they play and the way that they play them. So I feel like that is something to go back to what Bill was talking about with the European sensibility of that. That yeah, maybe it was more strict and more very rigid in the way that they're mm-hmm. playing. But yeah, when the stuff that we were talking about with the hard bop and the soul jazz and stuff like that, man, yeah, you can hear a person's emotions, expressions coming mm-hmm. out through their horn.
I should mention, just I'm just going to jump in here too. You know, hard bop. You know, the two main tributaries is coming out of bebop, right? But you know, there are a lot of people that were sort of imitating that bebop sound. It was kind of getting watered down, say on the West Coast especially. And so there was a hard bop. There's a deliberate attempt to infuse it with blues and but also gospel sensibility. Okay. And I feel like those two are closely linked, especially with what you were talking about, Marcus, with, you know. So
go ahead, Jacob. It sounds like I think you want to
just to wrap up that idea too. I mean, that's something that Bill mentioned a great phrase earlier, a good audience. Any audience, everybody can sing, whether they're good or bad. Mm-hmm. But as a listener, you can hear me on the saxophone and you can relate to what's happening with the way that I'm playing expression through my horn. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think that's something that a layman can grab onto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, I'm learning a lot from this conversation, and time is going quickly on us. And I know that you brought another track with you, right, Justin? So I want to give a chance to sample that track as well. So can you tell us what this track is that we're going to listen to a few minutes of maybe 30 seconds of this?
I'm going to kick that to Bill because this is his composition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This is called Turning Point. It was written, I guess, Darren and Marcus, you could probably maybe relate to having a moment in your career where it's the academic doldrums and things are not maybe quite as clear to you. And so so this was written in one of those moments, and it actually, or maybe right after one of those moments, suddenly clarity emerged, right? And so it's called Turning Point, and it really is kind of about that. So it's got a little bit of uncertainty in the beginning of the piece, and then there's a moment of resolve that happens halfway through.
So again, I want to thank you, all of you all, for allowing us to sample these two pieces as well as the new theme song for the show, and for giving us kind of the backstory on, you know, what inspired these two pieces. You know, a couple things. You know, there's a lot that I could ask here, and Bill, I really want to go back to the search, but we don't have time to do that. So, you know, Marcus knows that one of my kind of MOs on the show is to always commit people to coming back to have another conversation with us. So, you know, I already want to do that with you guys to get you to come back and have a deeper conversation. But I'm just curious, as we think about jazz artists, you know, just recently I re-listened to one of my favorite jazz compositions was by Max Roach. We Insist, piece, Freedom Now Suite. And I was recently listening to that, and it made me wonder, in thinking about this show, you know, besides, you know, Justin, anybody jump in here, besides Lee Morgan, we've talked a lot about Lee Morgan and Roy Hargrove. Who else would you identify as your favorite, you know, kind of your favorite jazz artist?
Oh man, that's a whole other show. No.
Just for Justin. Yeah.
I mean, that whole trumpet lineage we were talking about, for me, it kind of starts with Louis Armstrong, And then you get to like, and then Dizzy Gillespie kind of changed the game. And then there's all the offshoots of Dizzy. And then you get up to sort of more modern times with like Wynton Marsalis, who spawned a whole new generation, including Roy Hargrove, Nicholas Payton, and all these guys. And it's just this, you know, it's just this, these many tributaries that come kind of out of Louis Armstrong and then just keep flowing in a lot of different directions.
Yeah. So. You know, Justin, before Jacob, you and Bill jump in here to add to this, you know, Marcus and I just had the, not too long ago, the great pleasure of having Mitch Landrieu, the former mayor of New Orleans, on the show to do an interview. And boy, did he talk a lot about Louis Armstrong and about Wynton Marsalis, who he kind of grew up. He grew up with Wynton Marsalis. So it was, you know, that was a very interesting conversation with Mitch. But Jacob and Bill, favorite jazz artist?
A big one for me, kind of coming out of high school into early college, I fell in love with Charles Mingus. And he's not a saxophone player, but he had a bunch of great saxophone players in his ensembles. And if you want to talk about blues and expression, the way, I mean, Mingus's music is heavily influenced by the church. It's very gospel, very blues. It's some of my favorite compositions as well. Very, very dense and amazing saxophonist in and out of that band, his bands until he died.
It's something, you know, about the spirit that is there. I think, you know, Jacob, you bringing that up, it makes me think of another one of my favorite artists, saxophonists, is Kurt Whalum. And I really like Kurt Whalum's music. And to watch him and George Duke actually play together, I mean, that's an amazing show to just watch. But thanks for bringing that up, Jacob. And Bill, how about you?
So when I was younger, I was into The Flash. I was into Oscar Peterson. I was into Art Tatum. I was into all that stuff. And as I've gotten older, I've kind of really settled on two, which are Ramsey Lewis and Errol Garner. And both of them kind of took the piano trio concept and just took it directly to the people. It was just very like it's trying to do with the show, right? It's much more direct. And then Errol Garner just does, especially Errol Garner, I would say, is just a magician on the piano. There's just nobody that could do what he did. There's a certain push and pull between, you know, I try to transcribe it, but I can't get it. And I don't know anybody that can. Yeah. You know, they can get close, but.
Well, Marcus.
I would just throw in here. It's difficult to pinpoint one, but I think about one of my favorite jazz compositions, and this is Footprints by Wayne Shorter. And I think that Wayne emerges as one of my favorite jazz composers. Artist, I mean, it's hard to say. I will say that one of the performances that I saw as a kid, my father had recorded on VHS. I mean, I'm dating myself, but it was a recording of a Miles Davis performance. And what struck me is that Miles was performing with his back to the audience, and I'm like, what the hell is he doing? But that way of I guess performing jazz helped me to understand that, at least from Miles's perspective, you know, it wasn't about him. Right. Yeah. It was about sort of forcing the audience to deal with his creative language. And that for me, I think, is what is so potent about so many different genres of jazz music. But I guess I would say, though, that it's hard for me to move away from Oscar Peterson, Bill. I mean, because I grew up with him, and I mean, I've heard him perform so many different covers and standards. And he was just masterful. He's masterful. And
you know,
so it's hard for me to. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
I'd just like to interject an anecdote where he was on Mary McPartland, and she was asking him what his hobbies were. You know, some people would say fishing or whatever it is. Yeah. He's like, also playing piano.
Wow, that was a hobby.
Well, one last before we close out here. Time goes too fast. You know, just. Look, how do you guys feel about being in partnership with us, and how does it feel to know that we're going to be using your song Leroy as the theme music for the Waters and Harvey show? And thank you again for doing that. But how does that feel to you guys?
I mean, I know we're all honored, but I especially liked hearing the conversation you guys were having in the beginning about how you developed this friendship about, you know, and you have these interesting conversations, but you wanted to figure out a way to take your conversations and have them communicate to people who maybe weren't the beneficiaries of your education or some of the things that you, and I feel like Leroy for me and like the stuff that we do as a band, I feel like is very similar in that way, where we come together and we bring a lot of like, you know, education and ability musically, but we really want to make sure that like we're communicating something to a wider audience, right. You know? And I think that's real, it was so cool to hear you guys say that, because I feel like that's something that we try to do with our music as well. So I think it's a good partnership, if you will.
Well, Justin, thank you. And Jacob and Bill, thank you both. And Marcus and I have been doing some new things. And Marcus, I can't help but think here, as we get ready to close the show out, about, you know, the live shows that we've done recently. And I know that there is a desire on our behalf and a part of the Blue Ridge Public Radio team to eventually be really live, not just live on, you know, live streaming in a webinar or on Zoom, but actually be on stage. And I would love it, Justin, Jacob, and Bill, if we could get you guys as a band to kind of join us for one of these kind of larger community conversations that Marcus and I hope to do at some point in the future. And I just want to thank you again for giving us the honor and the privilege of having this music as a part of the show. Marcus,
thank you. Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you so much.
And again, as Marcus and I get ready to close out, we want to remind you all that the Waters and Harvey Show is produced at Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, North Carolina, in partnership with the Institute for the Promotion of Human Understanding.
And you can listen to our podcast on BPR.org, the BPR and NPR One mobile apps, and on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
You can follow us and get in touch on Facebook and Twitter, or write us at WHShow@BPR.org. And Marcus and I will look forward to joining you next time with new music. Take care.